Well, hello, Tracy. How are you today?
I'm good, Amanda. We are finally getting to do this.
I know. Holidays and rescheduling. So, how are your holidays?
My holidays were great. I was just telling you before we got on the recording that I am never planning to go back to pre-COVID holiday in terms of like the stress level. So we have to find that balance here with our family and with our extended family because this is kind of my new normal as to how I want to function. What about you?
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I am not going back to how I was living life before in many, many regards. But yeah, the holidays were great. They were very low key. I tried to kind of harness the spirit of just accepting things as they are and not putting a whole lot of pressure on anything, including our Christmas card. I had scheduled a photographer, our really good friend, to actually take family photos of us in the beginning of December. And then as the days approached, I was just like, I don't need this kind of pressure in my
Yeah.
life.
Isn't it a lot of pressure? I'm like, and you see people on Instagram who like they have like all these pictures, and I'm like, when? How?
Yes, exactly. Just and not even for the holidays, just like in life of their
Yeah.
family. They're beautiful and they're beautifully made. I'm right there with you. I'm like, I don't know how. So I couldn't even make it happen for the holidays this year, which that's fine. We are pushing it out a couple months. So instead, I gathered my two children, my husband in front of my laptop, and I turned on Zoom and I took a screenshot of us smiling in front of Zoom.
You know what? And it's just as good, if not better. We actually did holiday photos this year, and I kind of get to the point where when I set things up, and I have a 25-year-old as well who doesn't live in the house, who I also want photographed, right? So it's like trying to plan with his schedule, trying to plan with our schedule, trying to at least like get in the same color theme so I'm not wasting money because I want it to look like something.
Of course.
I just, by the time I get to the actual photo, I'm like, I'm over it.
Yep.
I don't even care. Put some kind of smile on your face. Do something.
Exactly. Oh, so true. I actually just watched a series. Did you ever watch Little Fires Everywhere?
Oh my gosh, I loved it.
Oh my gosh, I just finished watching it. And the scene where they're taking a family photo for the second time, and Reese Witherspoon's like, just go put on the effing shoes. I'm like, that would have been me if I would have done the
That
family
is so your inner feeling, right? And I gave up on all the idea of like ever getting a Christmas card out. So many people sent me pictures this year, and I think that people just had more time to do that this year, right? But I have always like I have never been able to get it out before Christmas. So it's always like somewhere in between the new year and 2 weeks after the new year. I'm like,
card.
it's a new year card. Do whatever you want with it. I can't make it happen. I just can't.
Love it.
Amanda,
Oh, that's awesome.
so what is the name of your podcast? Since we're doing a podcast swapped on this one, guys. So I'm gonna have her tell us a little bit about her podcast first, and then I'll tell you a little bit about mine.
Thank you. My podcast is called Finding Your Village, and it is about becoming more connected in the early days of parenthood. So I cover anything from pregnancy through postpartum to even up through the preschool years. And it's anything from how-to tips to just talking about how difficult motherhood is, mental health in parenting.
All of it is so needed. And I'm not going to even say the first few years, it runs the gamut of motherhood. Like, still, you're always going to be parenting your child in some way, right? With some form of advice, with some form of wisdom, like my 25-year-old, there's still so many things that I'm like, okay, I got to tell you this. Not like from a parenting stance, but more from like an equal stance. Like, oh, I remember when I was 25. I remember when I did that. So let me tell you, let me give you this tidbit of information. And that never goes away. Like, my mom's still doing that to me at 46 years old. And I think you just, it's a forever job. It never goes away. So I appreciate having people in spaces in every age of parenting that could like pass something down to me. It's so important.
Wow.
And so my podcast is kind of like the same, almost the same thing as yours, but just raising creative thinkers and getting people on board. We talked about this before too, getting people on board in the African American community to know that we have our own style in parenting and to just embrace that. Like, there's no rule book. We're not trying to follow after anybody. We're not trying to make our kids something that they're not, but just being okay to be yourself in that space. And as a mother, creating joy in the right now, because so many times it's like, I'm going to wait till my kid gets out of the house and then I'm going to do this, or I don't really have time to do this. But you know what? You just got to make the time.
You
got to force it in there some way, because why are we waiting until tomorrow? Tomorrow I might not be interested in that thing that I want to do today. So I just find ways to fit it in there. My friends always laugh at me because I have this thing about the locked door ministry. My door is locked right now. Like, I locked my door. Like, leave me alone. Go do your own thing. Your dad is out there. And even when my husband isn't here, I mean, if they are actively engaged in something that they like to do, then I'm okay to take 30 minutes away in my room and do something that I want to do.
Absolutely.
No one's going to die.
And that time is so important. I mean, from the early days of motherhood through all the days.
Yes.
Will you introduce the name of your podcast, and would you also share a little bit about your family?
Sure. So it is the Melanated Mom Podcast, where I said I speak to raising creative individuals while also taking care of yourself in the process. And so my oldest is 25. I have a 9-year-old and I have a 6-year-old. So I've been doing this for what feels like forever. And, raising my 25-year-old, I say, was seemingly easy. I was a single mom at the time. We basically grew up together. Everything was so fun. Everything was so exciting. And then I got to this age where I started having kids above 35 and everything was exhausting. And everything took so much energy. And then there were two of them. And then, as much as I love raising kids with another person, there was like meshing your ideas together with someone else. Before I was just like, I could do whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah.
No one was stopping me. No one was saying, oh, I don't like the way you're doing that. So all of that added an extra piece of exhaustion for me. And it just, I went through a lot. Like after my daughter was born, those first 3 or 4 years of her life, and she's only 6, I had a lot of up and down. And when I finally got more on the upside of things, I said, you have to figure out how to keep yourself on the upside. Now, there's things that happen, and there's things that are going to come sometimes put us out of sorts, right? Where we are not feeling our greatest. But for the most part, I want to figure out how not only to have happiness, but to maintain joy. And that's so different to me, because happiness just fluctuates. But I need to remain even keeled in all situations, because otherwise I'm drowning. And I don't want to be drowning like that. So I had to figure out what was going to keep me in that place. And what kept me in that place is that knowing that there are just going to be times when I have to completely tap out. And that is okay. And that's what I wasn't allowing myself to do, the superhero syndrome, that I had to do it all. And no one does it all. Then, no woman is an island. So I had to really like shake myself a little bit and say, if things don't get done, then hey, that's okay.
I love that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that you talk about, you differentiated between joy and happiness, and then making time for ourselves and not falling prey to that superhero syndrome. And so what we had talked about for the topic of today is finding joy in a lot of different things, but specifically finding joy in the midst of injustice.
Yes.
So start us off talking about that.
So my joy has wavered so much in the season of injustice. I just found 2020 to be like a really tough year. COVID, added its own piece of it. Yep. We had like a lot of serious issues with jobs here. Like, both of us were unemployed at the same time. And then the social injustice just added a whole different piece for me. And I just felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. And it was just, there was about a good 2 or 3 months that I just felt like I was always fighting to breathe, always fighting to like get on top of this emotion. And I just said that there has to be a way to find joy in this. Like, it's really sad. It's a really, I can't believe that we are here. Like, I never thought that we would be back to where I feel like we're really backpedaling in any of the progress that we made.
Yeah.
And when I looked at the way that things were shifting and the people that I lived around and the people that I thought that I knew and I didn't really know them, I was like, okay, so what am I going to do to maintain the joy? Because like I said, I can't go back to that place where I just had zero will to really like put myself into anything or to give myself to anything. I just couldn't go back there. So for me, it was a lot of like unfriending people on social media, telling people hard things, having hard conversations with people that they may not have wanted to hear, which may have ended up with us having a relationship or not having a relationship. Like I had to go through that, completely like turning off the news.
Yes.
Talking with my kids about things that I felt like they needed to know even at 9 and 6 years old. I had to do some of those things because I had to feel like I was rescuing myself when what felt like sinking again. And I was not, I couldn't do it, you know?
I really love that phrase that you just said, rescuing yourself when you felt like you were sinking. I mean, that in and of itself, did you feel like that brought it joy for you, like having agency and taking things on yourself?
Taking things on myself and doing the things that I knew that I had to do to be okay with things. And some of those things I had avoided so much in the past. Even if you knew that, for example, my neighbors have never been particularly nice to me. I mean, I live in a pretty much all white neighborhood, and mm-hmm. our kids play together. All of our kids are older now. They're in the 25-year-old range. Yeah. And there was always a problem. There was always some push and pull. It was always my son's fault. He was always the one who did the stuff. It was always, yeah. I mean, there was always an issue. And so I never really had conversations with them about how that made me feel. Or what that kind of did to my household, you know, to feel like every time I sent my son outside or every time we wanted to be free to do the same things that everyone in the neighborhood was doing, that it wasn't really freedom. And so some, you know, 15, 16 years later, here I am, and they're inviting me to do these things with them. And I had to really have a hard conversation. And I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be the thing that they want to hear. And still some of them, this was 6 months ago, maybe some of them still don't talk to me because I let them know some of the things that they did that I just did not feel that they saw in themselves.
Sure.
And so that was a hard conversation because, you know, these are the people that you have to see every day. But yeah. At the same time, I don't want to live a lie either. And that's part of like maintaining the joy, not yeah. being willing to live the lie.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Wow. How brave and vulnerable you had to have been to decide to, you know what, I'm not going to avoid this topic anymore. And could you tell us a little bit more about that situation, if you care to share?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So we had been invited to, this has all been during pandemic, right? We had been invited to have a social distancing wine day with our neighbors. And my husband volunteered me to go, which I told him that one day you're going to stop volunteering me to go places because it's very hard for me to sit with people and not be real. I can see you in passing and like whatever and say hi to you, but to sit with you somewhere that you invited me and not really truly tell you how I feel, right? So we got the invitation, we went, and I let them talk and have a good time. And then I just said, there's something that I have to say before we can go any further. You know, and I wasn't rude, but I also need to say some of the things that are on my heart because I think that they were inviting me because they did feel some kind of remorse about what was going on in the country. and they wanted to like build this collective around me. And I'm fine with that. I don't mind if you want to have this relationship with me, but if we're going to have a relationship, it's going to have to be based on real things, right? So you don't get to just ignore the things that you've done for the last 15 or 16 years. And maybe there's things that I've done that you want to bring up, and that's fine. But we need to have those discussions. So like I said, we did have some of those discussions, and I was the one doing most of the talking. And it was about split in half. Like, some people were really resentful that they thought that I was attacking them per se. And I'm like, just the way that the situation's played out, like, I need you to really see yourself in that situation. And some were very like, what can I do? What can we do as neighbors to make this better? So the ones that were like, what can we do to make this better, are the ones that made me stay, because it wasn't an argument for me. For me, when I am, as a Black woman, I've had an experience at the hands of something that you've done that I felt like was unjust, it's not an argument for me. No. You may never see it my way because you don't see things through my lens, but I'm not going to argue the point of how I felt, because you cannot take that away from me. So the people that really wanted to hear what I had to say were the ones that made me stay. So I feel a different spin from some of the people that really wanted to listen. And I feel a different spin from the ones that really didn't want to listen. They barely speak to me anymore, but that's okay. And I'm good with that, because I don't want to fake my way through any kind of relationship. If we are going to be real with each other and try to forge forward, then we have to put things on the table that might not be the most comfortable things to discuss.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what did you say to the folks that said, what can I do moving forward to make things better?
I gave them resources that they could look into. I told them the things that they should probably be talking to their children about right now, because that's kind of where it starts. Like, training your kids to be okay with people not being exactly like them, teaching them how to embrace other people.
Sure.
You know, and so that was a lot of it. And a lot of them reached out for resources. They wanted to know what they could do to be better, to learn about how to embrace every person just the way that they are. So, yeah, I mean, that was the best part about it, you know. And I don't feel like I'm here to educate anybody on race. Like, it's not my responsibility at all.
No.
But if you come to me and you seem even a little bit interested in it, if I have a resource that I'm already getting, then I'll pass it on to you. I'm not going to do the work for you if I'm not doing the work. But if there's something that I already have, then I'm more than happy to pass it on to someone.
Well, that's really generous of you. Thank you for just sharing and being kind and giving to pass along those resources, because that's something that, I mean, I've learned a ton this year just about my own white privilege, what that means to me, what my race is, because I grew up without having things said to me explicitly. Like, it was like, race, you don't talk about that. So I just made all of these assumptions. And one of the assumptions that was a limiting belief was for me was like, oh, I don't even have a race. Like, I don't see color, mm-hmm. that old. Mm-hmm. outdated adage. And I don't want to perpetuate that idea. And so one thing that I remember learning about in the spring of this year was, it is not for people of minority background to provide resources or to be the educators for people of privilege or white folks. There are so many resources out on the internet. I mean, you Google anything. And I mean, of course, you don't want to just go to Google and click on absolutely anything, but there are so many curated lists of books, podcasts, movies. I mean, you name it, that anybody can read, get access to, and educate themselves on. And so that's why I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate you being generous. Mm-hmm. Those folks that you felt were being real and that were interested, because that isn't your responsibility and that's not mm-hmm. your job. And I just hope that more adults of any age at all start looking into those resources themselves, which I'm happy to provide a link to that on this podcast episode. But on that note, you know, when we were getting to know each other, we talked about the idea of low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, there are just easy things that people can do these days that, I mean, when I first looked at a list of resources to understand the background about slavery, about racial injustice, about how to go about working towards racial reconciliation, I mean, some the first things that my mind, that I don't like to use the word lazy, but that my overscheduled self gravitated towards were movies. And I subscribe to Netflix. There's all kinds of movies on Netflix. There's movies online that are like $2.99, $3.99 to rent, that I would rent another movie for that fee anyways. And so to me, that was like low-hanging fruit. I'm like, heck yeah. I definitely want to watch movies or TV shows. And then for me personally, just speaking about my own experience, I then went from movies to podcasts. Hello, I love podcasts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now I'm like reading, listening to audiobooks or actually reading print books. But to me, it just blows my mind that some folks won't even think about the low-hanging fruit, that it's just like, instead of watching your silly, you know, reality TV show, you could watch a much better put together in production value show that's also going to educate you about a culture that you did not grow up in, that you're not inculcated in, and just about things in life that you don't know about, because not everybody knows everything. That's impossible.
Right. And that is key, what you said, that last thing, not knowing everything and not feeling the responsibility to be the person that knows everything. And I think that whiteness has been that all the time, right? Like white people are the gatekeepers of information. Mm-hmm. And so if we admit to you that we don't know, then that shows some kind of weakness. Oh, wow. And that should not be a weakness, because I don't believe that you know everything anyway. I don't believe that. So for you to show that you don't understand, it just does something for me. I mean, if somebody told me that they didn't understand, if they were honest with me, that is when I'm willing to share the most information. Yeah. And I can't speak for every Black person, but I know a lot of Black women that feel the exact same way. Like, if you had a serious question about, let's say, for example, hair, you know, and you really wanted to know something about that, I would never turn you away to make you feel ashamed for asking me that question if I felt that you were coming from a genuine place. So sometimes it's just admitting that you don't know, or admitting that you didn't understand the thing, instead of using terms like, well, I'm not a racist, or, well, I never did that. 9 times out of 10, you have contributed to something that wasn't quite right. And it's okay to say that out loud. And I think that people have so much more respect for you when you do that. And I don't know why it's so hard. And maybe it's because of the position of power that there's always been. Like, it's hard to say that I have to now admit to you that I'm not as powerful as I thought I was. Yeah. I really don't know. Because Black people are some of the most resilient people that I know. I mean, we could get to the lowest low. We could fall from the highest branch in the tree, and we're just going to climb back up because it's what we're used to doing. I just think that there's a lot to learn from that. Yeah. There's a whole bunch to learn. So,
yeah. So the way that we met is pretty cool. We both were on a live Instagram stream of Lisa Sharon Harper's Friday night kitchen table conversations, mm-hmm. which I try to attend every Friday because she's amazing. And I absolutely love listening to what she has to say. But the way that we both found Lisa Sharon Harper is that we listened to the talk that she did with Jen Hatmaker about mm-hmm. White women's toxic tears.
That was the best talk ever. I can tell you, I could listen to that talk about 2, 3, 4 more times in a row. It was really good. So I suggest that talk if you have not listened to it yet. White Women's Toxic Tears. You can go to Lisa and Sharon Harper's, or you can go to Jen Hatmaker's page and find that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I totally second that recommendation. And there were so many wonderful pieces of information to be understood from that, and to understand from, you know, two different sides of women that were, you know, just showing up open-handed and just saying, let's talk about it. Let's talk about these topics that a lot of people shy away from for whatever reason, to protect feelings, to protect their power, whatever it is. And one thing that I remember, I think it was Jen that said, is that white women were kind of told growing up that we just have to be the best good little girl that there is. And that's with absolutely everything that we do, with motherhood, with keeping house, with our social life, with knowing everything. And I believe that she made a great point in that conversation, that I think that's, for me, that resonated with me, that that's that nugget where that came from, of I need to know everything or do everything mm-hmm. perfectly, because I was raised in, under this impression that I needed to be like the goodest good little girl that there was.
Right. And there's so much, I mean, for any of us, there is so much danger in that, right?
Yeah.
Because none of us can be the most perfect person ever. And I think that we are in such a different time where if you were going to like really give your daughters or your sons anything, give them the gift of being imperfect, for it to be okay to ask questions, to be okay to not know everything, or to not need to be the authority on everything. Because I think that gets us in a lot of trouble. I think it just, it causes us to feel like we have to be a certain way all the time. And then it causes the people that you're trying to be in an authoritative position over to feel a certain way too. So I hope that, you know, moving into 2021 and just moving further on, that we could get away from the perfectionist piece. I mean, I've dealt with it a certain way in my life, and it does nothing but destroy us, because you can never reach, you're never going to reach that goal that you're going for. Like, as soon as you get to the place that you think that you wanted to reach, then there's always going to be something else that you feel like you need to do that you can never get to. And I'm just thinking about how exhausting that has to be for a white person to think that they have it all together and to be the goodest good person ever. And it's not going to work. You're never going to be able to be that.
Never, ever. No. And I mean, thinking about cultivating joy, like dropping that for me this year when I heard that, and really just, I mean, I told you before, but I've been on a soul searching journey towards self-compassion, because I never have embraced that. I thought that topic was very cringeworthy. And this whole year I have chased after self-compassion, and that has brought me more joy in my life than anything ever before, than you know, seeking perfectionism. And what's also interesting is that I'm a big Brené Brown fan, and I've read a lot of her books. And in her recent release of The Gifts, re-release of The Gifts of Imperfection, on her website, she has this rubric, this quiz you can take about where you are in life and kind of finding balance. And at the end, you get your results and you see kind of where you lie on the spectrum of, I believe it's 10 different areas. And so on one side of the spectrum, it says things you're kind of moving away from that are not serving you, and things that you're moving towards that bring you more fullness and wholehearted living in your life. And it was really fascinating seeing what were opposites that I had never put together. And on one side of perfectionism, on that spectrum, the opposite side of that was self-compassion. And I just did not ever tie those two things together. I was like, I thought that perfectionism was a good thing. I thought that I was supposed to be going after that. I legitimately thought that at 33 years old. I was like, how did I miss that memo?
Right.
Just the idea that self-compassion is the opposite, the antithesis of perfectionism, and that's actually what one should go after to live a more wholehearted life. Mm-hmm. That blew me away. And honestly, that kind of gave me an invitation to cultivate more joy in my life.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just going to be that self-compassion that fills you up, right? That makes you say that, I'm a human being. And I think that people have this like perception that we need to be superhuman for whatever reason, when everyone around us knows that we're all basically the same. Yep. So why is one person striving to be a superhuman and prove that they can do things better or different than another person? I just think that we have to be compassionate to ourselves. And especially as mothers and wives, there is just so many different hats that you're wearing constantly. And if you don't show yourself that self-compassion, those were the places that I was in that I felt like I was never going to be able to get up off the floor because I felt like I had a responsibility to my family, to the world, to show them that I could do it all every single day. And that is such an exhausting way to live. No one should ever have to live like that. Not one person. And what I don't want from white people when I'm seeking joy for myself or when I'm seeking justice for the world is I don't want them to feel sorry for me, or I don't want them to feel guilty, because that does not help anyone. The guilt doesn't help anyone. So let's get past the point of feeling like I'm not a racist or I didn't do that, or feeling like you have to prove something to someone. Just roll up your sleeves and do the work that you know needs to be done to progress. And that's it. That's all you have to do. There's no guilt associated with it. I'm not pointing the finger at you like you're the white person that did this to me. You're the white person that's holding the privilege.
Yeah.
So do something about it. And that's all. There's not even an apology in it. You don't need to apologize to me for it. I'm not trying to hold you to that standard, but I do want people to see themselves, because I think that's the only way that we're ever going to be able to move forward.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. And honestly, from my perspective on the journey that I've been on, I had to start with self-compassion in order to do everything that you just said. And then I thought that I was the most compassionate person towards other people, and that was a bunch of baloney. Because until I was compassionate with myself, I literally could not be fully compassionate towards other people. And then that invited me to be more curious and ask more questions and admit the fact that I don't know everything. And if there were times when, and you know, one reason why I really stayed away from the idea of racial reconciliation is because I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Mm-hmm. I was kind of given the message growing up, like, if you talk about race, it could hurt someone's feelings. And I never wanted to do that. But now,
and on the other side of that, not to interrupt you, but if you don't talk right about race, you also hurt someone's feelings. So, I mean, it's like, you know what? So we have to fall somewhere. So if we don't, if we're not talking about it, then we're just hiding in plain sight, right? And what good is that going to do us?
Yes. Thanks for saying that. And for me, since I embraced the idea of self-compassion, that gave me a little bit more leeway to say, okay, I'm going to risk hurting someone's feelings, and then I can apologize. If I do hurt someone's feelings, you bet I'm going to apologize, and then I can forgive myself. Mm-hmm. I have the ability to forgive myself if I hurt someone's feelings. But what has happened is that has not happened very much. And instead, what has happened way more is that I have learned and I have grown and I have cultivated more connections and more relationships. Mm-hmm. And that to me is everything. I mean, especially in parenthood, creating connections has been my life preserver, honestly.
And that's how, for me and my life, how I create the joy. Because when I make connections with people based on them being people, and not based on it being black or white, because now we are able to cross a barrier where we understand that there are things that have gone on that have not been right, and that we are responsible for fixing those things together. And then we can cross over into seeing each other as mothers who have the same problem of being perfect, as mothers who had the same problem of the superhero complex, then we are able to have real relationships. And that's what I strive for with every single person that I meet. We have to deal with the hard stuff first though, right? So we have to get past that thing. And I have to be able to say what I can do different. You have to be able to say what you can do different. We move past that, and then we move into actual real relationship. And that's all that I desire. Like, I'm just not a surface person. I've never been a person that can, the quickest way to lose me is to like have me talk about the weather with you for 15 minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd rather watch paint dry. I would. Like, I'm such an introvert that I only crave real, deep, meaningful conversation. And if I can't get past the point where you actually see that there's change that needs to be made, we're never gonna get there. We're always gonna be talking about the weather, and I'm just not gonna show up for those conversations. I can't. So what would you say has been your biggest lesson in this whole new quest for knowledge?
Great question. The first thing that comes to mind is getting to a place of acceptance of hearing about history and hearing stories that are really hard to hear and that are really hard to listen to. And my gut says, I don't want that information in my brain. And I immediately push back and I'm like, there's so much hurt in the world and so many challenging things. I don't want to add one more piece of like downer information. And when I realized that and leaned into that, I realized that's privilege. That's mm-hmm. my privilege. That's a big example of my privilege, is that I don't have to know about the history of slavery or racism or Jim Crow in this country, let alone other countries. I don't have to know about that because, first of all, in the public school education that I had, it was very whitewashed, which I understand mm-hmm. now. And second of all, it's not my history, and I have, it's not my history with quotes, okay? Because that's what I was told in school. And that's what a lot of people in my family also furthered that belief. And so finally listening to those stories and going like, I'm still breathing. I heard a really horrific story about that, something that was real, that happened to a real person, that is my history because that person was an American just like I am. I'm okay. I can take on that information. And you know what? So many of my other brothers and sisters in this country have taken on that information mm-hmm. because of a myriad of reasons. So I think for me, that was really important. And that's just my personal thing because I avoid things. I'm an avoider. I run away. I hide. And so for me to just stop avoiding and stop hiding and say, yeah, to do this work and to educate myself about lessons in history that I did not learn in AP US history, which, you know, I got an A in and I studied like, you know, it was my job because I thought that it was. I didn't learn some really, really big, important pieces of information. And now it's my job to go back and learn them. And even if it's really hard to hear, which a lot of it is, I need to know that. And part of that is the acceptance and even a little bit of self-compassion, because then that goes back to the guilt that you talked about. Mm-hmm. I feel guilty that I don't want to hear this. And then mm-hmm. being able to forgive myself and say, you know what? That's okay. I understand that you don't want to hear that. It is tough. It is unimaginable to think that a person just like me, just like all of the people that I love, went through such a horror. That's hard. That's a hard thing to do. But you can also do hard things.
Yep, I agree with that. And there is guilt on my end for going through a public education and getting the same A's that you got and not really knowing about me. Like how much stuff I didn't find out until I was researching things as an adult on my own. And still things that I don't know that were true for my people because no one ever thought it important to teach me that because of the whitewashed history that you talked about. And still so much of it is whitewashed. And I currently was having these conversations with the principal of my kid's school. What are we going to do? Because we can't keep teaching the same thing that is untrue to our kids.
Yep.
Like, every kid needs to learn the truth about what happened in this country and how this country was built and how much of it was a sacrifice for a group of people that look like me. Absolutely. And still, it's like we're not really, it doesn't seem to be a really big concern. So, you know, in my spare time, after my kids have to learn all the whitewash history, then I'm coming behind and teaching them about some stuff that really happened. And I find that, and I mean, look, life is never going to be fair, but I find that so unfair. I find it so unfair that because I want them to know these things, that I have to now sit them down longer than the 6 hours that they have to go to school already, right? Yeah. And teach them this other stuff that I deem it important that they know about themselves.
Yeah.
So
that goes back to the onus being on people of color to have to do the educating, and mm-hmm. that should not mm-hmm. be the case. That needs to just not be the case anymore. It needs to be on all of us, honestly.
Right. Because it's all of our issue. It's all of our history. It's all of how a lot of why white people are where they are today. Yes. A lot of why we are where we are right now. It's everybody's responsibility to know the information. And that also leads me into a lot of white people thinking that their kids are too young mm-hmm. to know about things that happened. But really, I have no choice. Like, my 9-year-old needs to hear what happened. My 9-year-old needs to know what happened to a George Floyd or a Tamir Rice, because that could be his reality. And I need to teach him now about what he needs to look for, what things could happen to him because he is a little Black boy. So if my 9-year-old can know about things that are not just, then yep. so be it with a 9-year-old that's a white boy. He should know that these things happen, right? And that they're not fair, and that it's our job collectively to change the narrative.
Yeah.
And so many parents hide that from their kids. And what that does is just make their kids get the privilege from a very young age that this doesn't apply to me. Right. Those same rules don't apply to me, and I don't need to know about that stuff. It's yeah. not, it doesn't affect my world. But if it affects my world as an American, then it should affect everybody's world. And that's just that's the only way that we're going to get to the place that I'm hoping that we one day will be able to work towards.
Me too. I mean, yeah. you're absolutely right. And it's my job as a parent to teach my kids about that by the time that they're 9 years old as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to hold on to that idea of privilege anymore, that my kids don't have to learn about this. And the other thing is there, I remember, I think it was actually Sesame Workshop that talked about, you know, talking to your kids about race, especially right after George Floyd was murdered. And they had said that a lot of kids, especially white kids, by the time they're 5 years old, already have racially prejudiced ideas. And mm-hmm. most of them, it comes from their parents not talking about race, mm-hmm. that they see and looking around in their parents' circle of friends and just seeing a lot of people that look like them, they would come to some assumptions and conclusions of like, well, if they're not in our circle and we don't talk about it, then there must be something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. I just remember learning that and thinking like, wow, that's huge. And that is such a disservice that unfortunately a lot of our parents of you know, my generation did to us, trying to avoid hurting someone's feelings, but it got us to where we are now. So I don't want to continue that on, and I'm going to take on my responsibility 100%.
Yeah. And I know that it's hard for everybody, you know, it's like, this is not exactly the kind of thing I want to talk to my kids about over dinner. You know, it's not exactly the conversation that I want to have, but I also need them to be prepared. And so it comes from a different space for me. It comes out of the space that I need you to know that these things happen, and I want us to be prepared as a family for whatever it is. So it's like, to me, it's like almost keeping your head on swivel. Like, you need to be aware of your surroundings. You need to be aware of what's happening, because these are the things that could happen to you. And I'm going to do everything in my power as a parent to protect you. And I feel like that's my way of protecting my kids. And the way that a white family can help me protect my kids is by also telling their kids what other people have to experience. So
yeah, thanks for sharing that. I mean, gosh, this is so important. And continuing on with the topic of finding joy in injustice. I mean, so many of the things that we talked about of letting go of the superhuman, you know, superhero complex, acceptance, having hard conversations. All of those things initially don't seem like they would spark joy, but they mm-hmm. do. I have experienced this firsthand. I guarantee they give freedom and connection, like we talked about. And that to me brings so much joy.
It does. It just changes, like you said, it just changes everything because of the fact that you think that if you're holding on to this what you think is safe place, that you're really experiencing the happiness or joy. No, you have never experienced real happiness or joy until you let go of the safe space and say, okay, I need to dive in and figure out what I need to do to help as much as I can to solve some of the stuff that's going on right now. And so as sad as I am that we, I don't even like to talk about politics, that we had a president like 45, yeah. As sad as I am about that, he bought up a lot of stuff that needed to be bought up because he made a lot of people be who they already were. They were like this. And so they felt comfortable to come out and say, this is who I am. And so now it gives the people who really want to make a difference in the world a chance to see what we were talking about. Like, I think sometimes like it would be people would think it was a fallacy that Black people were saying that there's still racism. I don't think people really understood that we were still going through something. And so the fact that their eyes were actually open to everything that was going on made things a lot different. It made people say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is what you've been talking about.
Yeah.
And so the people who really didn't understand it or believe it and want to make change now see why we really need to make change. And I think that's one of the biggest thing that has happened in the last 4 years since we've had him as a president, is that now that people can see they weren't telling us a lie. Like, I always felt like I was trying to prove myself to say that this happened to me, and this is, and people were like, not saying no, but not saying yes, that it really did happen. They really didn't believe that it could be happening. And now they actually see that, yes, it's happening. And now I have a responsibility as a person to do something different about that.
Wow. That's really inspirational as an example of finding joy in injustice. I mean, mm-hmm. that you're saying like, I really wish that it didn't take this, but it did. So what are we going to take away from it? Well, mm-hmm. we've all been educated. The gaslighting has slowed down towards ceasing. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being able to have this conversation with you, Amanda. I'm so happy that you sought me out. I'm so happy that we made the space, because I know sometimes I talk to people about podcasting, and as much as we both probably really want to do it, it doesn't always pan out. So this was a much needed conversation. And these are the conversations that I want to have to be able to forge forward.
Me too. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and for agreeing to connect with me. And I totally agree with everything that you just said. So thank you. I really, really appreciate this conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate you as well.